pride, and burdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay, so I was just thinking about trying to talk about something tonight, and I had a few, just a few ideas that pop into my mind. Early on this week, I was sitting in the library and I was just looking through the Anguttara Nikaya, and I came across a small sutta on the five ways of overcoming conflict. Yeah, so it's a very short sutta, and basically the Buddha said one way of overcoming conflict is to have loving kindness towards the person that's giving you trouble, and the other, that's number one. Number two number two is to have compassion towards the other person, understanding that there's reasons why they're in a bad mood, or understanding that they said the wrong things because they might be going through a hard time. So that's the second thing. The third thing is to have equanimity towards that person. So basically just to stand back without judgment, and to just see what is going on. Yeah? And then, you know, things tend to calm down, you know, with all these things. When somebody gets angry at you, you have metta towards them. You know, they calm down. You have compassion and understanding. You know, they calm down. And the other one is kind of interesting. The fourth one is the Buddha said you basically ignore the person. You turn away from them. which is, you know, that's wise, because sometimes when you're living life, you come across people that you can't deal with. They're just too difficult. So you can just basically just turn away, yeah. And the last one is to understand that that person is heir to their karma. So whatever they do, you don't have to get them back. Karma will get them back. That's something very easy to understand. But the point that I want to focus on is the point of turning away from the person, ignoring the person, by using that idea in the meditation practice. Yeah? Because, you know, sometimes we get caught up in our thoughts and our thinking. And the more we get involved, the more it stirs up within our minds. So sometimes it's good to just turn away or just ignore that thought. And if you can do that, you know, things will start to settle down. The letting go process starts to happen. And you know, when it comes to letting go, as Buddhist practitioners, we try to do it. You know, we sit, we meditate, we listen to all those teachings, something comes up, we try to let go, but that thought keeps coming back. We try to let that go, but it keeps coming back again. And it reminds me of when I was younger. I would like to play sports, believe it or not. And one of the sports that I sort of got into was tennis. Yeah. So in my backyard, we had this garage in the backyard, and the yard was kind of big. This was before my mother knocked the house down and the new house built. So what I did was I used to go into the backyard with a tennis ball and racket, and I would. I don't know if I drew a line on the wall, but I drew the line on the wall, mimicking the net of a tennis court. So I would hit the ball. It would hit the wall and it would come back to me. Right? And I'd hit it again. It would hit the wall and it would come back. Right? The idea that I'm trying to illustrate to you is hitting the ball, I compare that to like the idea of letting go. Yeah? But because we're not letting go correctly, we think we may be, but we're hitting the ball, it's hitting the wall, but it keeps on coming back. So the hindrances or the sensual desires or the wandering mind, you think you're letting go, but it keeps coming back. Until you get to the point where you finally get it, so when you hit the ball, it goes flying away and it never comes back. So that's where we try to, that's what we try to, you know, develop as a mind of a meditator. That ability to just put things down and put them down for real so they don't come back to disturb us. And that takes a lot of like time and reflection on how these things affect our mind and our sense of peace. Yeah, if we know what peace is, then we can start to know what disturbs our peace. So we'll develop skillful means to avoid the things that cause us trouble. And one of the things that cause us trouble is this thing of just revisiting our past, or just holding on to things, or just getting caught up in the thinking mind, and not seeing the dangers in them, that they're actually taking away from our peace. And once we start to see more peace in our minds, then it's easier for us to let go. Yeah, because these things, they do become like a disturbance after a while. You know, you've been meditating for a long time, you sit down and you know what peace is, and you know what disturbance is. Disturbance is whatever's moving in the mind, you know, thinking about the past, or thinking about the future, thinking about work, any stuff like that, thinking about the Dhamma even. It just creates that that movement of the mind. And that peace and that stillness, that's something that you can actually feel. You know, it feels comfortable, there's quietness in the mind, and it's something that you can sense that there's a lot of benefits in it. Yeah, just it gives you like a sense of well-being, gives you like a sense of happiness. You're living more in the moment. And that's something, that's like a gift that you can give yourself. And that's like the gift that the Dhamma can give you as well. And it's all, you know, like this practice is all about personal experience, this practice. Yeah. And I can talk about it, but I can't make you experience it. You have to do that yourself. Yeah. And it's like anything, it's like anything good, you know. Once you discover what it is, you just keep going back to it. And it's, yeah. And it's like the snowball effect that Ajahn Brahm would talk about. It just gets better and better and better. And then one day you'll shave all your hair and become a monk. Yeah. Alright. Let's start. Is it the longer your hair, the more attachment you have? Nah. That's just silly. That's silly. I've been silly. Okay. You guys cool enough? I'll just turn it over. So as we're meditating, we're just allowing things to slow down. So when we're meditating, we're basically giving ourselves a break, just a bit of time out from the world that we're living in. From the world of, you know, all the talking, all the busyness, all the planning. Putting all that aside, just giving up the world for a few moments. In this moment, you're allowed to forget about everything. Just let everything disappear. Let everything go. in this moment. You know, there's no man, or there's no woman, there's no old or young, there's no tall or short, there's nothing really. So just allow yourself to just hang out with nothingness. I always like the idea when meditating we're just giving ourselves a break from our world, a break from our responsibilities. It's a time for us to, you know, relax and just be. Just be in the moment long enough to be able to see the beauty in this moment. And that beauty, it's just something that draws us into this now, into this nothingness, where there's just our minds and our bodies and nothing else. So as we're sitting down, we're just allowing ourselves to feel peaceful. As if there's like a blanket of peace, and we just throw that over our minds, throw it over our sense of being, and just allow it to take over. When you start feeling peaceful, you know, your mind automatically gets drawn into this present moment, into this stillness. So you can see, if you have a mind which is thinking about something and you see that it is a distraction, can you see that it's taken away from your sanity, from your sense of peace? Just see how dangerous, not dangerous, but just see how thinking can ruin your meditation experience. you can start to see the thinking mind is not contributing to any sense of peace. The thinking mind is not contributing to you being in the present moment. So is that something worth holding on to? Or is it something worth letting go of? So now, when you're experiencing some peace, some stillness, being in the present moment, the reason why there is peace is because there's the absence of thinking, the absence of commentary, and the presence of mindfulness, which is being here in the moment. And the way to get there, and how you got there, is because you let go of something. You let go of that thinking, proliferating monkey mind. And this is where you learn how to meditate. And now, you want to, you can just do the breath meditation. Simple breath meditation. Just watching the breath go in and watching the breath go out. There's no need to locate the breath. There's no need to watch it at the nose or watch it at the stomach or watch it at the mouth. It doesn't really matter where you watch it. As long as you're watching the breath. Just going in and going out. Going in and going out. And just having developed just a sense of peace and a mind that's been dwelling in the present moment. A mind which has slowed down and the thoughts have lessened. It just makes it so, so much easier to pay attention to your breath. It's having that ability to have enough space in your mind, the lack of thought, to make the breath meditation enjoyable. Sometimes when we meditate and when things are just not going well, you know, we're struggling, we're falling asleep, the mind isn't settling down and you feel that you can't really do anything at this moment. And that's okay, that's fine, that's normal, that's a part of the practice. So when we find ourselves in this kind of situation, one thing that we can do is just learn to be patient. Yeah, having the ability to just sit and accept whatever's happening in your mind or happening in this moment. You can accept what is going on, you're practicing kindness to yourself. I will now ring the gong and you can all come out of your meditation. Okay, any comments, questions, anything? How was it?
continuing with your tennis analogy.
Yeah.
What happens if you hit the back neighbor's back neighbor's window?
The six and out. The six and out. You get in trouble. That's a
double demerit points.
Double demerit points, yes. Anybody, any questions about the meditation, about Buddhism, about anything? No? Bob?
I've got somebody rattling around in my brain that I'm supposed to be nice to.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Back on your subject of just letting them go and it seems to be taking more effort, and so I'm not, because I'm trying, I guess, it's making the meditation difficult.
Yeah, I think a lot of people experience that when they have some issue that's going on in their lives. It makes meditation very difficult because it's something how would you describe it? It's something that's sort of like stuck in our minds, and even though we know that it's better for us to let it go, but we just find it difficult to, because it means something to us, or we find it important, or we're just getting caught up in it. And it's always in our mind, it doesn't go away. It stays there for a very long time. But I think when you find yourself in this situation, the more, like, if it's a person, the more separation you have from that person, the less you'll think about them. Yeah? You know, if this is this person that you see from time to time, then I don't think it does. I don't think it'll be in your mind for a very long time. But if you're living with this person and you're having trouble with them, and you have to see them every day, then it will be a lot more difficult for you to put it down or to let it go. And this is the point that I'm trying to make is, yes, you think the other person is creating all this suffering for you, but the more you see it, the suffering is coming in from within yourself, from within your own mind. And say this person is not there anymore, you don't see them for a couple of weeks, and that thought or whatever that was in your mind, you've finally forgotten about it. And then you ask yourself, you know, how does it feel now to not have to think about this person? You know, it feels great. It feels good. So you ask yourself, why can't I just be here and just forget about that person? And you have every right to not think about them, because you have to look after yourself. Like Ajahn Brahm said, you know, you have to protect your own happiness. And that's something that he's taught his monks as well. Because living in a monastery, you know, you're not going to get along with everybody. And that's the truth of the matter, even though people are monks, but we're not perfect, we're unenlightened. So we, you know, rub up against each other. And sometimes we carry that into our meditation, into our hearts. But we learn from it. Yeah, we think it's the other person's fault. But if we look carefully, it's just our attachment to the idea that it's that person's fault. And then you start to see that the more time you spend away from that person, you stop thinking about them, and you stop thinking about them. And that teaches you, you're just wasting your time, really. Yeah, it's causing you turmoil. It's not worth holding on to.
Thank you, Majam.
I think, any other questions?
I noticed recently when I meditate, when I get really relaxed, my head starts to droop over.
Yeah.
Should I correct it or let it be?
Is it making you fall asleep?
A little bit sleepy.
I don't think Well, I don't think it really matters. Are you like drooping forward or leaning to the left or leaning to the right? There's many reasons why people sit in a particular way. And when I was a young meditator, Ajahn Brahm always told me to just find a comfortable position to sit in and just hold it. But then meditating for a long time, I figured out, because I had a sore back recently, and that posture is quite important if you're planning to meditate for long periods of time, because you can actually cause yourself injury. So my advice, because I had an injury, because you know, living a life as a monk for a long time, is to try to sit with a good posture. Yeah, so you know, have an arching back or a straight back, and just keep your neck up, keep your chin out, so then you don't create any future problems for yourself. Yeah.
Thank you.
Because one thing you don't want is like a pinched nerve. It's terrible. So now I try to sit like not the way I wanted to sit, like in the past, but sit like in a medically correct position. Yeah. Any other questions? Huh? I was trying to think about something to talk about, and maybe just say a few words on about the part faith has on the Buddhist practice and meditation. So I thought to myself, well, what am I going to talk about? I'll just talk about faith, and that's all the thoughts I had on faith that come up into my mind. So what else am I going to say? And I think, because I do think about it from time to time, and I think each and every one of us here, we have a certain amount of faith to come here. Because truly, we don't really know like the deeper meditations, or we don't. Some of us don't know what peace really is, or we've just heard it from somebody, or our friend told us to come here, or this is what the doctors say. So in a sense, our experience don't match the words. So we come here out of a bit of faith, and faith in the in this kind of practice, it does serve a purpose, and many different purposes as well, if you look at it. In one sense, the people that come here on a daily basis, they bring food. Out of faith, you know, in the Buddha and in the monks, and they're doing what they can to just give back to Buddhism. And when we come here like out of faith, to be able to do the practice, and hopefully we will experience some sort of peace and some sort of happiness in it. And also And the other thing is the other aspects of faith that one may have is the examples that you see in your everyday life. And for some of us as Buddhists, we have a lot of faith when we see Ajahn Brahm, or we have a lot of faith when we think about the Buddha. But I also like to. We have a lot of faith, and that faith just encourages us to listen to our teachers or listen to the Buddha and try to live the words of the Buddha in our everyday lives. And another thing is, I think, which is very important, is to have like faith and belief in yourself when it comes to this practice, because the Buddha, he did say that each and every one of us, we have the potential to become enlightened. It may not happen in this life, but but it may happen in the next life or the life after. And just having, and I think that's a very skillful means to have, just to understand that sometimes we lose faith and we think to ourselves we cannot do it. But if we look at the examples in our world today, you know, we look at the monks, or you know, when I was growing up, it was like Ajahn Brahm or Ajahn Chah, and a lot of the monks in Bodhinyana have a lot of faith in the Buddha. But I always thought to myself, you know, if another human being, you know, can do it, another human being with, you know, eyes, a nose, a mouth, a couple of ears, arms, legs, a beating heart, you know, another human being, if they can do it, then surely we have a crack. We have a chance of being able to do it ourselves. And that's like, you know, just having that belief, having that faith in our own ability is another way of looking at faith. But faith, if you look at it and think about it, you can use it to see Buddhism from many different kinds of angles. And I can talk about it even more, like, but you know, there's no point really because it's 8 o'clock. But people do have reasons and different means on why they develop faith in the Buddhist path. And I think the longer you practice, that faith becomes wisdom, actually. Because it's not an idea, it's not a thought, it's not something that somebody else said, it's not something that you read in a book, but it's something that you understand yourself, and it's something that you understand through your own practice, through your own experience. So in a sense, that faith turns into wisdom. And that's what we want to see happening within our own practice. Okay. That's enough. Oh, chanting.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Roger.
Fruit that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guiding spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, and those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life, may they soon attain the threefold bliss, and realize the limitless, through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize nirvana. In every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dharma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and disillusion be dispelled.